When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Mail checks, invoices, documents, and everything you need to keep your business running. Get rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS. And with the mobile app, you can take care of mailing on the go. Make the same no-brainer decisions as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up at Stamps.com with code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia, movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the AEW Dynamite Review Show here on the unofficial WWE podcast. Today is March 10th, 2021. My name is Mimi Burris, and we have a whole lot to get into, including the MJF swerve with the Inner Circle, an amazing opening match, and so much more.
It's about the 14 years it took me to go from undesirable to un-goddamn-deniable.
Your AEW World Champion, Kenny, by God, Omega.
Because I'm better than you, and you know it.
All right, everybody. Yeah, it is March 10th. I am recording this Wednesday night right after AEW Dynamite. Not the usual time I record. I usually like to wait until Thursday night, give it a little time to settle in, and because I like to try to get to bed at a reasonable hour, and after AEW Dynamite, to record an entire podcast is not something I really want to do because I have a job that I have to get to the next day. But tomorrow night I have some prior plans, and I wanted to get on the mic as soon as possible to talk about all the amazing developments that happened tonight. And I know I didn't give you guys a lot of time to shoot me an email with any of your thoughts, but if you'd still like to do that, we can definitely talk about it on next week's show. You can email me at mimi.realwwepodcast@gmail.com. And anything in regards to AEW, we will probably talk about it here on the AEW Review Show. But I know I have gotten an email or two from you guys about your highs and lows for the week. So we will definitely address that on Sunday. But yes, today is Wednesday, March 10th. And what an amazing follow-up show to the Revolution pay-per-view. I thought they did a great job with a lot of stuff. And some stuff wasn't, you know, A+. But for the most part, this show was pretty incredible. So per usual, we are going to go down the match card one by one so we don't miss a thing. And we're going to start with the opening match tonight, which was Rey Fénix versus Matt Jackson. So yeah, I mean, you guys already probably knew what you were getting into when you were watching this match. And if you didn't, you would be pleasantly surprised because, you know, you were going to get an amazing matchup. I mean, these two guys are some of the best wrestlers in the world. So the match starts off with some grappling, and then the Moxley Kingston response to Revolution is advertised for after that, and I am excited to talk about that as well. But want to give a quick moment to just talk about, I feel like I should have like a moment of silence every show just to appreciate Rey Fénix. So that's what we're going to do right now. We'll just have a moment of silence in appreciation of Rey Fénix. All right, now that we just had some dead air on the podcast, let's talk about him. I mean, Rey Fénix is incredible, and if you've listened to me before, you know I have only high praise for him. He did some awesome rope work in this match, and there was a hurricanrana through the ropes and a springboard arm drag to the outside. And if you just look at like the hang time he gets on some of those springboards, it's incredible. I have never seen anyone suspend in the air like he does. Just unbelievable, exhilarating to watch, and I'm sure I will continue to praise more of what he did as we continue to go down this match. So yeah, there was some great back and forth wrestling and some really exhilarating reversals. I mean, the unbelievable springboard spin kick by Fénix to the back of the head in the corner. I mean, this guy is so innovative with like the luchador style, and not that luchador style isn't exciting by itself, but I mean, I think about like someone like Lince Dorado in WWE and how much he would thrive in AEW just to be able to have the creative freedom to do whatever he wanted in a match, because I guarantee you that Rey Fénix has all the freedom in the world considering some of the stuff he does in these matches. I believe he comes up with this stuff himself, and this guy does something I've never seen before almost in every single match he's in. I mean, I don't even really know how to describe it, but I love how he, like, jumps from outside on the ropes to inside on the ropes. It's just, he's so exhilarating to watch. Later down the match, he hits a tightrope wall kick. Or no, excuse me, he doesn't hit the tightrope wall kick. But I just really quickly want to say that that's probably my favorite move in wrestling right now. Might seem simple compared to some of the other amazing stuff these guys do, but I don't know why that pops me every time. But he misses the tightrope wall kick, and Matt counters it into a destroyer inside the ring, and then Fénix rolls outside of the ring. So what does Matt Jackson do? Follows him and hits him with a destroyer outside of the ring again for a 9 count, and then Pac encourages Rey to get back in the ring. Rey gets back in the ring, and Matt hits an elbow drop for a close 2 count. He gets Rey Fénix in the sharpshooter and continues that story that Rey was kind of like subtly selling his lower back. And then Rey Fénix goes for a drop kick on Matt, but Matt moves out of the way and he hits Nick Jackson. And this is one of my favorite parts of the match too. Matt dodges a clothesline from Rey Fénix and then slides outside the ring. You see Pac kind of hovering over Nick Jackson. Doesn't do anything, but he might be doing something. And Matt Jackson just nails him with a super kick, like picture perfect super kick. Slides back in the ring. They go back at it and kind of hit each other with some lackadaisical right hands, but you can understand because they were both clearly so tired after what they had been through in this match. Super kick to Fénix from Matt Jackson, and then another amazing part of this match, right? I know I'm going down every freaking thing that they did, but everything was so amazing. I'm actually leaving a lot out. So if you missed this match, I don't know why you're listening to the review show, but thanks for listening. But go watch this match. If anything, on that show last night, this was the thing to watch. So yeah, Matt Jackson hits Rey with the Fénix. Matt Jackson hits Rey Fénix with a super kick. Then Fénix falls to his back, gets up with a kick up, and then kicks him in the back of the head. And I don't usually love these spots. You know, they do it a lot here and there now with this new style of wrestling, obviously, where like one guy kicks the other guy, he falls back into the ropes and like hits him still. Like, I just don't, to me, it's a lot of the time it can be a lack of selling. But I didn't mind this one specifically because afterwards, right, both men are on the ground and Fénix doesn't go for a cover or anything like that. He sells the fact that he just got super kicked and it was all just like adrenaline that kept him going afterwards. So minor difference, but I really didn't mind. And honestly, these guys could have been doing anything at this point in this match, and I probably would have been praising it. So, and lastly, Rey Fénix reverses Matt Driver. Again, I'm stumbling all over my words. It's late, guys. But Rey Fénix reverses Matt's tombstone into his own pile driver and gets the 1-2-3 in the middle of the ring. And that is the match. And like I said, unbelievable. Just what you expected. These two guys are incredible. And this was so much fun to watch. You couldn't look away. But I, in terms of, you know, analysis, I think this was, you know, I feel like I've been talking about this match as a fan, but in an analytic perspective, I think this was the right decision to make. You know, I think Pac faces Nick Jackson within the next couple of weeks and beats him. And then you've got doubt as to whether or not that the Death Triangle is going to take the tag team belts from the Young Bucks. And I mean, personally, I'd love to see gold around the waist of both Pac and Phoenix, but I don't know. I mean, it's going to take a tall feat to beat the Young Bucks and take the titles away. So that's how I would do it. I would definitely not have Pac lose to Nick. I hate when they do that, when they have one tag team partner win and one lose, unless you're leading to some rivalry between the two down the line. But I really hope they don't do that right now. And I don't think that's what's going to happen. And I'm booking a match that hasn't even been announced. But so yeah, incredible match, right booking. Not much more I can say than just unbelievable wrestling. You know, this wasn't, I don't think, up to par to, like, the Omega match, but wasn't a title match in the main event. I don't think it's fair to compare the two, but I'm going to say it one last time, and then we will move on. Amazing match, and I felt lucky to be able to watch it. And moving on down the card, we got the Moxley and Eddie Kingston exploding barbed wire death match follow-up, we can call it, I guess. So, that's so funny, Moxley in his sunglasses. I just thought, just the appearance of them sitting by that fireplace thing, it just looked funny to me. I don't know. I think Moxley is so good at comedy that he doesn't even have to say anything, and he already kind of pops me. And I don't know if anybody else feels that way. Maybe I'm just a mark. But anyways, so Eddie Kingston, I think, did such an amazing job addressing what happened at Revolution. And like I said, Moxley is amazing as always. And he's clearly selling that he was hurt in the match because it was brutal. I'm sure he is really hurt, too. But the dialogue between the two about whether or not Kenny was joking or really wanted to blow the ring up was great. I think they acted like they were in the dark as well, and I think that was the perfect way to go. The one line that popped me the most was when Kingston or Moxley, I forget who even said it, they were like, "Impact paid for the bomb," definitely. Like, brilliant. Perfect way to, like, make fun of yourself, you know what I mean, but also keep it in kayfabe. I just thought this was done really well. They addressed it perfectly, and Jim Ross said it best, I think. I love the candidness of all this. They were funny about it, and they were, like, I don't know how else to put it besides they were, like, Jon Moxley and Eddie Kingston about it. I think this was best case scenario, and I believed everything they said, and that's kind of the whole point, no? So I thought this whole segment was done really well, and not much more to talk about that. So we will move on to the Cody Rhodes versus Seth Gargis, I think was his name. I didn't catch how they pronounced it, but that's what I'm going with.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
This was just a squash match, but I did love, you know, you have Cody Rhodes go give his weight belt to a special fan in the audience, and I'm a sucker for that stuff. I still, like, get I fall in love with John Cena every single time he does one of those little make-a-wish things, especially during the shows. Even if he's so annoying before and afterwards, I love that stuff. So, you know, this was just Cody being Cody. And I don't think it looks... Some of this stuff can sometimes look a little, I don't know, like Stephanie McMahon, you know, staged, whatever. But I believe all the goodwill that AEW does and things like this, I don't think it looks too cheesy, I guess is the word I'm looking for. I think these guys are just good-willed human beings. So Cody gets a quick victory with the figure four leg lock. Like I said, this was pretty much a squash match. The one thing I liked about that, and I don't know if anybody else notices these kind of things or I'm just a weirdo, but like, I think it puts over moves that aren't like typical finishers for one of the wrestlers. So, you know, from what I see, I don't see Cody do the figure four to end a lot of matches, and this puts it over as something that could end a match. So it doesn't always have to be the same move that ends a match every time, like the same formula. I think AEW does such a brilliant job about that, especially in tag team matches too. It's not the same tag team formula match over and over again. They have their problems, don't get me wrong, especially with those tag team matches, but I think the pros outweigh the cons. So in my opinion, right, I think this whole match was just a way to talk about the injury to the shoulder, at least have the commentators talk about it plenty. And then, obviously, to introduce a rivalry with Penta, who was sitting at what I could assume was the Spanish commentary desk, but I'm not exactly sure. Penta interrupts Cody's interview and tells him at Revolution he lost, and he's lucky that he didn't go after his arm more because he would have hurt it so much that he couldn't have picked up his baby daughter. That sets Cody off. Well, really, the translator said that technically, but I honestly don't... It doesn't... No pun intended, but it doesn't get lost in translation, if that makes any sense. I thought this was really well done. And that sets Cody off, and he goes to attack Penta. They have to be broken up, and this sets up a match for next week, which we will talk about down the line. Exciting little segment. I thought this was cute, you know, and well done, and cool. Keep the story moving. Give me, like, the next feud for Cody and Penta. And I'm sure this match next week is going to be incredible. So I'm looking forward to it. And it's, like, as simple as that, to build a storyline. That easy. Based off another match that was a multi-man match that they were both in. That easy. It leads to a singles match, not the next week afterwards, but the week after that. Beautiful. About Cody's shoulder, I do want to talk about this briefly. I assume Cody is like slowly selling this injury more and more. So when he needs time to take off to be with Brandy and their baby daughter, I assume they'll do something with the shoulder to write him off TV. If not that, they might just have him off being a dad because they've been so public about the whole pregnancy on Dynamite. So we'll see, but I think that's one easy way to write him off. Or maybe it's just another layer for Cody's character right now. I know it seems kind of weird to have a shoulder injury as a layer for your character, but whatever. The more layers, the better, in my opinion, as long as it doesn't get too discombobulated. But and maybe Penta will be the one to take him out for good, and then that takes him off TV for a while, and then you've got a rivalry between the two with a fresh match, because it won't have happened for a little while when Cody returns. So, exciting. I like this whole segment. And we're moving on down to something I didn't like as much. And I'm sure you guys could guess it if you have listened to any other of my podcasts or watched the show and know what's coming up next. But this was the Orange Cassidy and Chuck Taylor promo at an arcade. I loved... Chuck said this line. He goes, he says, "We've been at this for too long, way too long." And I'm sitting there like, no... No crap, you have been. This whole storyline has gone on way too long. Anyways, again, you guys have heard me rant about that plenty. But Chuck says he'll be Miro's butler for good if they lose one more match. So trying to get another tag team match with him and Kip. Orange Cassidy, I love this part. Orange Cassidy puts the little arcade car in park. I thought that was cute. But otherwise, I don't like this segment. Don't like this rivalry or feud. I'm done with this. And I thought, hopefully, that after the pay-per-view, that Miro could move into a new direction, I would have put him in the stable that we're going to talk further along down the line, but nope, same old stuff. We're just going to do more of this Best Friends versus Kip and Nero. I'm sick of it, and I don't know about you guys. Again, no one's kind of told me about their thoughts about this. I'd love to hear if anybody likes this. Please email me if you actually enjoy this, because I'd love to hear your subjective point of view, because all you guys are hearing is mine, right? I'm not qualified for this. It's just my opinion, and I just think this has gone on way, way too long, and it's boring. And I love Orange Cassidy. Get him in something that's not so boring. But nevertheless, moving on down the line, we have Tony Schiavone interviewing Sting, kind of. Sting comes out and talks about how they won the street fight, and then he is interrupted by Lance Archer and Jake Roberts. Lance Archer is a heel again, I guess, or making his way downtown back to being a heel. I don't know. Anyways, he says something about how he doesn't need to win a match. He doesn't need to win the ladder match to be the face of the Revolution and get a TNT championship shot. Or I don't know. Something about how he doesn't need time, or he deserves more time. Something weird. Didn't get it. Didn't get the point of this, except for the fact that it's obviously building towards another maybe TNT title match between Archer and Darby Allin, which we've seen already. So, or no, I take that back. We haven't seen that. Maybe I'm wrong. I remember the Cody versus Lance Archer one, but it's late. I'm forgetting this. I don't know. I didn't. The promo was weird, but I like the angle. I'm sure it's predictable, because I'm sure in the next week or two we are going to get some, you know, after a match they're going to cut to backstage and Sting, Archer is going to have powerbomb Sting through something or whatever, or hopefully Sting will be on the ground so he doesn't actually have to take the bump. But that's what I'm predicting is going to come from this. It's a new angle, same kind of thing with the Cody Penta thing. I just thought this wasn't executed as well, but whatever. I am all for, you know, continuing to enhance more storylines. The more storylines that are going on, as long as it doesn't get all convoluted between everybody, great. More layers and layers and layers of storylines gets, first of all, gives me more stuff to talk about on this podcast. But second of all, right, just continues to enhance, you know, the entertainment factor of the show and keeps you invested. Because I don't know about you guys, like, I am ready to tune in next week to see what's going to happen next with certain storylines. Again, more so things that we will get into later down the line. So let's do just that, because the next thing was an interview with QT Marshall and Lee Johnson. QT brushes off eliminating himself from the Casino Battle Royale and puts over Lee Johnson, and that's pretty much the whole gist of that segment. Then we get the match between Ethan Page and Lee Johnson. Ethan Page had a quick promo during his entrance, and I liked it. You know, he just kind of made it clear that he's the heel in this program, or he is a heel, which is good to do, because if you're new to a program, you never know what you're... Anytime someone debuts and is new or returns, you kind of are veering towards the babyface thing already. So to make it clear that he's a heel, great, love that. I had weird audio issues throughout this entire match. I don't know if anybody else had that. It almost sounded like there was like a basketball game going on in the background, or some sporting event. Probably kind of towards Lee Johnson's entrance, towards like the end of the beatdown that we'll talk about in a minute too. So super distracting. I hope no one else had to deal with that, because it was frustrating. But nevertheless, Paige continued to tell the story that he's the heel during the match. You know, the way he wrestles, obviously, the ref's checking on Lee Johnson, he punches him in the face. You guys all know the story. Typical hook or crook, you know, heel wrestling. I thought, though, Ethan Page looked impressive, you know. Clearly, this guy is talented in the ring. Why else would AEW have signed him? The only thing for me was this match went on a little bit too long. It was pretty much a glorified squash match, which I guess Lee Johnson can take, though I thought they were going to do something with him because he clearly had momentum from his last win. I don't know what they were doing with that. I think he could have picked, I don't know, maybe Lee Johnson was the perfect pick for this. I can't think of anybody else off the top of my head, so maybe they couldn't either. I did want to see Ethan Page showcase, though, but like I said, I think this just went on a little too long. And if they hadn't made it clear that Ethan Page was a heel, he attacks Lee Johnson after the match. But the story beat to this whole thing is that QT Marshall does nothing. Dustin Rhodes comes out to make the save and QT just walks off. So again, during a match, another story beat going on. I love that. Like, another thing to get invested in. Continuously, I think about every single segment on the show, another thing to get invested in, another thing to get invested in. Like, that is how you continue to produce an episodic television wrestling company. So well done. And then finally, my audio issues stopped. So again, I don't know if anybody else had to deal with that, but it was distracting. The only other thing I want to say is that Ethan Page, apparently, I don't know a lot about him, but is supposedly, you know, his strong suit is on the mic. He's good in the ring, clearly, but his strong suit is on the mic, so I would love to hear more from him, and hopefully we get to do just that. All right, moving on down the line, we had the cute little Hangman Adam Page interview with Alex Marvez. Page pulls up in a little lawnmower, and says that he bought all the stuff, like bottles of booze. I forget what else he said. A bunch of funny, cute things or whatever he says he bought with the money that he got from Matt Hardy, and says he donated most of it to, I think he said, the Jacksonville Continuing Education Program, but I could have been wrong. Something, some good charity.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Which I have no doubt that he did. And obviously, even if he didn't win Matt Hardy's earnings, I'm sure they did some donation. I don't think they just say that to say that. Again, kind of like the Cody Rhodes belt thing. I just have faith that these people are good people. Then the Dark Order all join him on the lawnmower, but I think it was 7 on. It was cute. Like I said, funny little segment, nothing too serious, fun humor, and I love the storyline with Hangman Adam Page and the Dark Order. And this was all I needed for this week. Like, this was the only beat for the story I needed for this week. No overkill, just cute. Moving on, continuing to show that this is still going on, and I'm sure we will get further developments down the line, but it's nice to see Hangman Adam Page happy for a minute. All right, so again, next segment was the supposed Christian Cage interview with Tony Schiavone. Oh God, I just can't talk tonight, guys. Which turned into the Kenny Omega segment, but we will start from the top here. Schiavone starts putting Christian Cage over, but then the infamous girls with brooms come out to interrupt him, and Kenny comes out, obviously, afterwards with Don Callis and the club by his side. And real quick, I just wanted to say this. I hate Don Callis. I don't know if anybody else does, but I hate Kenny Omega and I hate the club. So all of these guys are doing their job. But really, Don Callis, man. Like, talk about real heel heat. Just annoying. I hate Don Callis more than I hate MJF. Just does a great job as a heel. I want to see him get his butt whooped. And apparently he's a lot like that behind the scenes too. Like, you know, you hear the best characters are just yourself turned up 100. And I am sure that's exactly what Don Callis is, but probably only turned up about 10, because at least that's what I've heard from, you know, other websites and interviews and stuff. But all right, so moving on, Callis puts Omega over. I love that he calls him the king of the deathmatch. They address the sparkler routine of an explosion. He says that they're not going to confirm or deny that they had anything to do with it, the whole botch at the end of the barbed wire deathmatch. I don't think this nearly addressed the situation as well as Moxley and Kingston did, but I understood the premise of what they were doing, and they really leaned into the idea that Moxley and Kingston looked like a pair of idiots, and that's a quote. Just laying in the ring and talking about how they humiliated the both of them. And that was a good story beat as well, I think. I just don't think they did nearly as good of a job of explaining this whole thing as they did. But they really leaned into the whole humiliation factor. And I think I almost felt like they overdid it a little bit. I think Kingston and Moxley kind of made fun of themselves a little bit more. I know it's hard probably to do as a heel, but I don't know. I just didn't think this was done nearly as well. Then obviously we get Kingston coming out to the ring to interrupt them. He doesn't say anything, though. Callis just talks about the history between both Eddie Kingston and himself, and that he, quote-unquote, fired him from Impact, and says that he just always fails whenever he's close to success, essentially. Omega starts egging him on, and then, of course, Kingston punches him in the face. Starts out a brawl. You get Moxley coming out to make the save, but obviously they are still outnumbered. So what comes up on the screen? None other than Christian Cage's entrance music and the countdown, which is kind of poetic if you think about it. And he comes out. Omega is still laying face down in the ring, and he puts his hand out. When eventually he gets up, he puts his hand out for Christian. Christian doesn't shake his hand. He turns away, does the typical heel thing, goes for a cheap shot. Christian dodges him and tries to put him in the kill switch, but Callis pulls him out of the ring just in time. And then Omega's like, no, you know, like that, like, I don't know, it was very cartoony, like, let me back at him, coach, like, let me go in. And Callis has to hold Omega back. Christian picks up the belt, and at my first instinct was, oh no, this freaking 47-year-old is going to be our AEW champion. But when I thought about it a little more, one, I don't think they're going to put the strap on him. And then two, Christian looks great. 47, he looks like he's at least maybe 40, like given, you know, knock off 7 years. He looks great. And I'm excited to see what he's going to do. He's got some high expectations and some big shoes to fill, but he looked good. So I'm excited to see, again, another thing. I am ready to tune in next week to see what the next beat in this storyline is, and continue that this company continues to pull my intrigue in each one of these little storylines. I think almost every single segment that we talked about, I'm ending with talking about this, that I'm ready to watch next week because I want to see what they're going to do next. And that's exactly what a episodic television show is supposed to do. So we won't talk any more on that. We'll move down the line to the six woman tag team match, which was Britt Baker, Nyla Rose, and Maki Ito versus Hikaru Shida, Rio Mizunami, and Thunder Rosa. I gotta bring this up first. I don't know how many of you are familiar with Maki Ito, but I was not. But God, that entrance is so annoying. And I guess it's good that it is because she's a heel, but oh my gosh. Except this week was hilarious. Obviously, she comes out or whatever after Britt Baker and Nyla Rose. She's doing her whole singing karaoke thing. And then you get Hikaru Shida, Rio Mizunami, and Thunder Rosa all come in to make the ambush on Baker, Rose, and Rebel. And she just keeps singing with the music cut off and everything. It was funny. I was laughing. But I can't stand the entrance otherwise. But this one was good. So then we get the match actually starting, and Maki Ito and Shida start the match. Later on, you get Rio Mizunami in the ring against Maki Ito. And another thing, real quick sidebar, I think I talked about this on the Revolution review, but Rio Mizunami's moveset, like just some of it, is not for me. She's an incredible wrestler, extremely talented. I don't want to take anything away from her, but it's too cartoony and not believable for me. Like, there is no way Ito would just sit in the corner there waiting for Mizunami while she's dancing all around the ring and to hit her in the corner. Like, if Maki Ito moved at the last minute, I'd be like, okay, I can understand that a little more. She was playing possum, but she just sat there. Good couple seconds go by, like, that's plenty of time to, like, realize where you are and move. I just wasn't, and the chops are too silly for me and not hard enough, for lack of a better word, but it's just, it's too much suspending my disbelief. Meanwhile, as I say that, in another wrestling company, there is a man vomiting black goo while another man creates a doppelganger out of him and an upside-down pentagram. So, I can live with this. I can live with this on AEW. All right, then we get Thunder Rosa ends up getting the 1-2-3 with an adjusted piled driver on Maki Ito. The real story comes after the match, obviously, as Britt Baker attacks her. And this was, again, I popped for this too. So Britt gets her in the lockjaw, and both Rebel and she beats her up with the Rebel's crutch first, and then she puts her in the lockjaw. And Vicky Guerrero and Rebel come, and they're, like, essentially doing the, like, equivalent of, like, a Facebook poke to her while she's just, like, suffering in this lockjaw. Like, you know, Vicky Guerrero's, like, throwing haymakers down on her, and Rebel's just, like, pushing the crutch against her. It just looked funny to me. It worked. It popped me. And I'm excited for this match, again, announced for next week, but we will, again, talk about that later. And I like that if they're trying to, like, form little stables amongst the women's wrestlers like they did for all the men at the start of AEW, great. That's awesome. That was a great way to start storylines again, and you form connections and friendships, and you know these people are aligned with these people, and it makes for great singles matches because there's a bunch of other people to wrestle while you wait for that singles match. It's a whole nother conversation to have, but I like what they were doing here. The execution was fine. I'm don't need some of the wrestlers in this match. I just don't like some of the style of wrestling in this match is not for me, but if it's for you, great. Totally subjective opinion on my part. So then we get the Matt Hardy private party segment. Not much to say about this besides that Matt says he is adding a new addition to the Matt Hardy empire, which is Butcher, Blade, and Bunny. Didn't love the way he, like, disregarded Bunny in this, but whatever. I don't know. Not much to talk about. But moving on down the line, we have the TNT Championship match between Scorpio Sky and Darby Allin. And you guys, I really thought they were going to give Scorpio Sky the belt, and I was kind of disappointed. Darby Allin isn't really doing it for me. Again, I think I'm in this super minority with that. I think he's an incredible wrestler, awesome stunt guy, like, puts his body on the line. I enjoy his matches. I don't know. I'm ready. Maybe I'm used to the hot shotting. I'm just ready for somebody to take the belt off him and see him in some new feuds. But again, I don't know. I don't even know if that's it. I guess I can't really come up with the words to describe it, which is not great for a podcast. But yeah, it's just not. Maybe it's the Sting edition, because Sting doesn't really do it for me because I'm 22 and Sting was wrestling before I was alive. I don't know. But anyways, this match was a great match, obviously, because it's Scorpio Sky and freaking Darby Allin. But one thing I want to say real quick is I would have loved to see Darby Allin taped up with something. I know that it's his whole thing that he's resilient and like a just made of steel and whatever else, but he didn't have any bruises or cuts on him or anything. And I know the whole thing was cinematic, but if you want me to believe that he's truly injured based off or off that, you got to wrap him up in something, because you can't make him have bruises that he doesn't, if that makes any sense. So just a minor thing, but I thought about that. So the announcers stress the condition of Darby Allin, which gives him an out if Darby loses. That's why I really thought Scorpio Sky was going to win here. But I like what they did at the end of the match anyways, and we'll get to that. But so Scorpio Sky is kind of tweening while he gets into this match. Did some heelish stuff on commentary last week, but, you know, still gives Darby Allin the fist bump, babyfacey. And then the match starts with some grappling. Darby gets the better of the exchange. Later on, he tweaks the left ankle, landing on after he flips off the back of Scorpio Sky. Sky takes advantage for the most part of the match, or at least for the most part of the picture-in-picture commercial break. You get Darby Allin hitting a stunner for the near fall, and then he hits the Code Red, which is a beautiful move, by the way. Hits the Code Red for a near fall. I love, as much as I just kind of like, you know, moaned about Darby Allin still the TNT champion, I love how he sold that boot from Sky out of the corner. Again, I love how he sells, period. But the way a wrestler sells, the more a wrestler pays attention to selling a move, the more I will care and invest myself in the match. When you don't sell, if you don't care about selling, I don't care about the match. It's like that simple, because I don't believe what's going on. But if you, even if it's like a small little move, if you sell it enough and it doesn't look like too much, I'll believe that you really just got your butt whooped. And so I believed it there, sold it beautifully, like chef's kiss, made such a difference in the match. Like I said, the more wrestlers care about selling, the more I care about the match. So Darby goes for the suicide dive. This was incredible. And Sky counters it into a cutter on the outside. Like, I've never seen that before. Another amazing counter. Darby Allin goes for the coffin drop, and Sky counters it into a powerbomb. Then Sky goes for, I think, his finishing maneuver, and Darby counters it with the small package for the three count. And then the difference between this roll-up and every roll-up in WWE history in the past like 2 years, I hate to make the comparison, but I think it's worthy of it, is that the way Scorpio Sky, well, first of all, let me put it this way, there's not one every other match, so that helps, but the way Scorpio Sky sells the roll-up, one, he's like flailing trying to get out of it, two, it looks like a really tight small package, and then three, right afterwards, he's like face down, hands on his head, like, I can't believe I fell for that, or I can't believe I didn't see that coming. Like it was a genuine surprise. So beautiful, beautiful ending to the match, in my opinion. I never thought I'd say that about a roll-up, but they're just crammed down my throat now. So, but he really made the roll-up mean something. So, and then, obviously, after the match, we get Sky's complete heel turn, because he attacks Darby Allin and puts him in the heel hook. Another small detail I loved about this, and this is what I'm saying about AEW in general, but specifically in this match, it's all the small details that really make the difference. You know, you had all the refs trying to pull Scorpio Sky off him while he's putting Darby Allin the heel hook, obviously on the injured ankle. And the refs actually look like they're making an effort to pull him off. Like, it doesn't look so staged and fake. The little touches like that make or mean something and add more and more believability. I want to invest in what I'm watching, and things like that allow me to. So Sky looks at his hands afterwards. I thought that was kind of good, almost like, you know, I guess the pun is intended, he's like proud of his handiwork. And I thought overall this did its job. Like I said, I thought Scorpio Sky was going to come away with the title, but I was perfectly fine with this too. And maybe there's another title match down the line that Scorpio Sky does end up beating Darby Allin. So I'm curious to know where Scorpio Sky goes from here. I hope they really do something with him, because the man is incredible. But you guys, I'm sure you guys know that as well. So then we get to the announcements for the matches next week. And I want to give you guys a quick little preview for each match, you know, in my perspective, obviously. First one is the Good Brothers versus Mox and Kingston. Obviously, you know, self-explanatory, makes perfect sense. Excited for that. You know, not much more to say. Just, I thought Mox was going to be off TV, but I guess not. You know, I think Renee Paquette is obviously still pregnant and hasn't had her baby yet, so he's got time. But I'm excited to see that. The next one is Cody versus Penta. And this is, again, I'm super excited for this match. And, like, this, the all of these matches, too, I guess I'll wrap this all up into one. It's such a simple formula that AEW applies. Very simple. Very, very simple. They see what happened on this week's Dynamite. And then Tony Khan or whoever in kayfabe, right, sees what happens on this week's Dynamite and then makes the matches for next week and announces them so we can get excited to see all that stuff go down next week. Because, like I said, I'm excited to tune in for AEW. Like, they have their main event already announced. It's not just like, you know, what's it called? They don't just wing it from the intro promo on the show. Like, it, that doesn't make sense. And again, it haunts my believability on more WWE television now, because now that I've seen how well this can be done. So the way AEW does this, again, another small detail, but it really makes a difference in me investing myself in the product. So super excited for that match. Penta's so fun to watch in the ring, and I'm sure it's going to be a great one. Butcher and the Blade with Private Party versus Jurassic Express and Bear Country. I assume Bear Country's probably going to take the fall in that match. I would be surprised if Butcher and Blade and the Private Party lost. I assume Butcher and Blade get the actual pinfall as well. Maybe there's some kind of tension with them in Private Party. I don't know, but we'll see. Jade Cargill in action next week, which essentially just means a squash match, which I'm all for. Love jobbers, love the formula. It works every time. And I'm excited to see her in action, obviously, after that awesome Shaq main event. And then the main event of AEW next week is going to be the Lights Out unsanctioned match between Britt Baker and Thunder Rosa. The women are main eventing AEW Dynamite. And no two women deserve it more than these two. I know Hikaru Shida is the AEW Women's Champion. I'm sorry, though. Britt Baker is the face of that division. And if you want to look for a baby face of that division, it's Thunder Rosa. These two women are incredible, and I'm super excited for this match. The feud has been building for sure, and I'm sure it's going to be great. Definitely some interference here and there, absolutely, but I trust AEW to not do anything unless it is going to further build the story of whatever the feud is. So I'm excited next week, like I said, all matches to look forward to. And then last but not least, the final segment of this wonderful Dynamite was the Inner Circle War Council. And I'm pretty sure we all kind of saw, or at least we all thought we saw where this was going. MJF interrupts Chris Jericho as he says they need to add a new member and says maybe it's time that they let someone go. And then we hear Sammy Guevara's music. Good to see him back. I know Sammy Guevara is kind of a controversial figure with some of the stuff he said, but as a character, I love Sammy Guevara. I think he's incredibly talented in the ring. Obviously, there have been a couple botches here and there too, and we have never talked about that on the show because this show didn't exist then, but nevertheless, I was excited to see him. He tells Jericho to watch something up on the Tron, eventually convinces him. And a video plays of Sammy setting up his phone hidden in a room with the Inner Circle minus Jericho. The video shows MJF explaining they had been talking about new leadership in the Inner Circle and that they need to cut off the head of the snake and give Chris Jericho a nice little dirt nap. Cuts back to obviously all of them in the ring, and MJF tells him that he didn't want him to find out this way. But then sick Santana, Ortiz, and Hager on Jericho, and obviously they walk very slowly over to him, and then they all make the turn, and Jericho says, "You really think that we don't talk every day?" And they all face MJF, obviously, and, you know, MJF supposedly gets outsmarted here, and I love this, you know, pause in the segment real quick just to talk about, I love this, because first of all, Jericho, a babyface turn. Obviously, after this, the whole Inner Circle, besides MJF, a babyface turn, because anyone against MJF is a babyface. But secondly, AEW doesn't treat their wrestlers like they're stupid. Like, no crap Jericho would know that this was all going on. You know, he's not a stupid guy. In fact, he's probably one of the smartest minds in wrestling. So I love this part. I thought this was a nice swerve. It wasn't the typical thing we thought was going to happen. And speaking of swerves and the typical thing we thought was gonna happen, we move on, and that Jericho says that he's gonna fire MJF out of the Inner Circle. You get MJF looking like a little slimy heel in the corner, and says he didn't want to take over this Inner Circle. He didn't want to take over the Inner Circle, and then he stops, facial expression changes, and says because he was too busy building a stable of his own. And then the lights go out, and out come FTR, Wardlow, Sean Spears, and Tully Blanchard all appearing in the ring. Again, a great swerve, and I think this is a great another addition to this storyline. Like, just when we know what's going to happen, of course, one step ahead of us and something that we didn't expect. At least I didn't expect this. Maybe you guys did. And I think a great couple of heels to have behind MJF. So they all brawl in the ring, but MJF's stable gets the best of the Inner Circle. Hager gets a bottle to the heads. Sammy Guevara's head goes through the chair. And then they handcuff Santana on Ortiz. And then they give him the, what's it called? Give him like a double pile driver. Actually, Tully Blanchard technically jumps off the turnbuckle and spikes him into the double pile driver with their hands cuffed behind their back. Like, oh my God, what a painful bump to take. It looks so dangerous. But again, I trust these guys know what they're doing. You get MJF perched on the top rope, like a little, again, slimy heel. He hits Jericho with his pinky ring. Jericho starts bleeding. He hits him with the bat and knocks him out of the ring. And then Wardlow powerbombs Jericho off the stage and through a table. And we get MJF's new stable standing tall. Like I said, I love this because at least you got in the beginning that the baby faces aren't stupid. And then you got this amazing swerve and this amazing heel stable that I'm super excited. Again, what do you know? To tune in next week to find out more. I want to know the name of this stable. And I want to know, you know, give me more hatred that I can have for MJF, because I hated him throughout this entire thing. And this whole turn worked really well for the Inner Circle. I think they're going to make a great baby face faction. Because they kind of already essentially are in a lot of ways. You know, Sammy Guevara already had the baby face turn. Jake Hager is freaking hilarious with the championships. Yeah! And Chris Jericho has the catchiest entrance music in the business. So, you know, Santana and Ortiz as well were slowly kind of making their baby face turn. So all of these people, right, little by little, we didn't even notice they're all turning baby face. No crap, they weren't going to turn on Jericho, right? Like, this was a beautiful way of having this all be done. Like, what a swerve. And I think we were all expecting what we originally looked at. We were all expecting what we originally thought was going to happen, which was obviously the Inner Circle turn on Jericho and MJF leading the Inner Circle. But we got this instead, and I am way more on board with this than that. So that was AEW Dynamite, guys, and I don't know about you, like I said, for the millionth time on this podcast, what a show. Super excited to see what they do next week. So excited that I wanted to hop right on here right after AEW. It is past midnight now, though. I hope you all have a wonderful rest of your week. Can't wait to talk about this next week. I would love to hear your guys' thoughts on the show. And what you think is next for MJF Stable, or whatever you guys want to talk about, you can email me at bme.realwwepodcast@gmail.com. Otherwise, I will see you guys on my Highs and Lows show on Sunday, where we are going to talk about all the stuff that was done well in wrestling, and of course, all the really bad stuff in wrestling, because it's only Wednesday, and there was already plenty of it. So that was the show. Hope you guys, like I said, have a great rest of the week, and I will talk to you soon.